Welcome to today's episode of Teaching Writing. My name is Roger Graves. I'm the Director of Writing Across the Curriculum at the University of Alberta and Associate Director of the Center for Teaching and Learning. Today's episode is on the plain or low style. The last episode, the one we did previous to this, was on style generally, where we talked about both the plain style, the middle style, the forcible style, and also the high style, the plain style. It seems basic, and so maybe in some areas it isn't valued as much as it should be. Plain, hardworking, sober, honest, modest, unpretentious. Those are all good things, I think, but plain can also be understood as stripped, denuded, austere, bleak, and severe. That's not what we're talking about in today's episode of Teaching Writing on the Plain or Low Style. Today, we're going to define the plain style in writing and distinguish it from cultural considerations of plainness. We'll talk a little bit about what plain language looks like in academic contexts, drawing from examples in documents written for non-technical readers, as well as documents that are written for academic researchers. After identifying some of the key characteristics of the plain style, we'll analyze some examples. To conclude, I'll suggest when you should write in a plain style. Sound good? Okay, let's get started. So style, there are really two kinds of things people think of when they talk about style. One is the technical kinds of analyses of style, and the other is the cultural considerations, the low style as in low culture. Well, let's talk about the technical analysis side first. Now, so that involves looking at word counts, how long are your sentences, vocabulary choices, which words are you picking from, and linguistic structures. There's ways in which you can write in a more organized fashion that are easier for people to follow and understand. The cultural analysis part of style takes a look at, say, swearing and counterculture and resistance. So I put this excerpt in from a recipe book called Thug Kitchen that has swearing in it and things like that. Low culture uses techniques like swearing. It suggests counterculture kinds of things. It involves resistance. The middle style is associated with the middle class. It uses proper language, standard language usage, that kind of thing. Highbrow culture is associated with sophisticated, esoteric, mannered, the language of the dominant classes. They're setting the style trends that other people then follow. Here's our first example drawn from the low style. Welcome to Thug Kitchen, bitches. We're here to help. We started our website to inspire motherfuckers to eat some goddamn vegetables and adopt a healthier lifestyle. I know, it's a bit much to listen to, but from a statistical point of view, it looks like this. It's got 25 words total in that excerpt, which comprise three sentences. And what that means is your average sentence length is about 8 words per sentence, and you're going to understand that that's readable by a wide variety of audiences. Now, culturally, I think this is a kind of a highbrow thing masquerading as lowbrow, perhaps, because really it's a satire of the Julia Child type cookbooks, which are written in a much more sophisticated fashion. Here's a more academic example of the low style. In this paper, we contribute to the thought and dialogue needed to create change in the value system of engineering by exploring an ethical framework that has received little attention in the engineering-related literature to date. Okay, in this excerpt, you've got 36 words in one sentence. That's not what plain language is about. However, it starts with a subject and a verb, and they put those at the start of what's called a simple sentence, and that is what plain language is about. Now, the vocabulary in this excerpt is not really plain language because it has polysyllabic words and there are abstract or vague terms. And as you can see from the statistical analyses excerpt that I posted there on the slides, that it's given a rating of E for where A would be the most readable. So it's not really that readable. Here's another excerpt from the same article. There's three chunks here, and so I'll read them together as one. Each of these phases then map to an ethical element: attentiveness, responsibility, competence, and responsiveness, respectively. A fifth meta-element, integrity, then integrates the four elements into a cohesive whole. Toronto's framework for care ethics can be described as interconnected and sometimes overlapping sequence of these five elements, as approximated by figure one. So in this excerpt, we've got short sentences, simple sentence structures, and in the first sentence, the use of a list. All of those things contribute to a more readable text. The sentences are 16 words, then 14 words, and then 24 words. From the point of view of a university-educated reader, these are well within the boundaries of what somebody could be expected to follow. Now, readability is a huge issue when trying to communicate technical material, such as information about cancer medications, to the general public, people with, say, a grade 10 level education. Some of the problems that one study found was that there's information overload in those messages, they're unclear, the vocabulary can be difficult, it can sometimes be incomprehensible because of its technical nature, the tones are uninviting, and the content does not specifically target the people that are actually receiving the medications themselves. So what is plain language? It's a worldwide effort to improve the clarity and accessibility of how legal contracts, government documents, and other important information is written. Generally speaking, it's characterized by short sentences using specific, uncomplicated terms that the target readers can understand. It's a good basis for writing to both academic and non-academic audiences. At its heart, plain language involves an ethical relationship between the reader and the writer. That is to say, we assume that writers want to communicate clearly with readers. That's not always true. We want you to take your reader's point of view, and when you understand that, then write to them knowing how they're approaching a topic. You want to organize ideas around what the reader needs to know rather than what the writer wants to tell them. The next excerpt gives a sense of how you might organize information for some readers. Here it is. In Toronto's view of care ethics, responsibility is a central moral category. When a need is identified, one must decide if one feels responsible for it, and if so, how to respond. Responsibility in care ethics differs from other, more traditional notions of responsibility in five major ways. First, it is not universal. And the excerpt goes on from there, my point being that they identify in one paragraph there's five major ways, and the next paragraph starts with, first, it is not universal. So you know that's the first of the five different ways. By signposting and signaling your structure, you're making this easier for people to follow. So moving from organization then to the word level for plain language, there are some principles for plain language that say things like, use words that are accurate, appropriate, and familiar to the audience. Use technical jargon sparingly, and do not use business jargon at all. Use active verbs most of the time, and use strong verbs, not nouns, to carry the weight of your sentences. And in the excerpt that I've posted there in the slides, you can see that they're using verbs like adopting, spotlight, focus, looking, influence, reminds. And those are all strong verbs. Those are the kinds of verbs that they're advocating that you should use. So what does plain language look like from a style perspective? Well, number one, when you have a choice, be concise. Vary your sentence length and sentence structure. Use parallel structure, especially in any kind of a list. Put your readers in your sentences by addressing them directly, perhaps. Begin most paragraphs with a topic sentence so you're identifying for people what is coming up. Makes it a lot easier for them to follow. And use transitions to link ideas. So more specifically, let's talk about sentences. Keep your sentences short. So working memory can only process about 25 words in a chunk, and that's why we say use 25 words as your limit for sentences, roughly speaking. Aim for 15 to 22 words. That's about 2.5 or 3 lines in a document often. So keep the paragraphs short, and by that we mean 6 to 8 lines of text. But here's an example. We're not starting from scratch. Qualitative research studies performed by our team and others provide information about what people care about when it comes to health data. For example, it's important that privacy is protected, there is a public benefit, and that the findings from health data research don't disadvantage any groups. So those three sentences are 5 words, 22 words, and 26 words, and there are 3 of them make up that paragraph. So why is it important to keep sentences short? Readers miss important points when you overextend their memory. They may not reread a long sentence, so they've forgotten something from the start, but rather than go back and reread it, they just keep going. And so they may, in fact, stop reading your document altogether if that happens repeatedly. Here's an example of a methods section from an article that's written pretty much in what I would call a plain language style. Here's the quotation. This work explores samples of student writing on the topic of electronic waste recycling in industrializing countries. These samples were written in 2011 by undergraduate students at a large public research institution in the western United States. Students from a variety of engineering majors in a large entry-level electrical engineering course were provided with an article on the health and environmental impacts of waste electronics in China and India. They were also given three questions pertaining to the article and asked to write a short 1 to 2 page essay as guided by the provided questions, see below. The assignment was optional and students were incentivized with extra credit to be applied to their course grades. The students had 1 week to complete the assignment. Now, the reason I suggest that this is really in a plain kind of style is that the sentence patterns are simple, 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 simple sentences, a compound sentence, and another simple sentence. So when your text is dominated by simple sentences, those are fairly easy for people to follow because you get that subject and verb right at the front or start of the sentence. And so they can figure out what's going on in the rest of the sentence. The sentence lengths here, the longest one is 32, there's a 29-word one, but the rest are all 20 words or shorter. And so that also contributes to readability here. Now, you can't always write short sentences. I've given an example in the next two slides of a 49-word sentence, which I've reduced to 19 words as a way to sort of suggest what kind of information might be put into a footnote or put somewhere else. It doesn't have to be in that sentence. In the example, instead of putting the name of the article in the place of publication, I just said, in a recent article, we present a plan to work with the public on civil communication about health data. And that's how I got it down to 19 words from 50. You can go too far, of course, when you start to get concision as your number one priority, but so don't sacrifice clarity to keep a sentence short. Don't shorten sentences by leaving transitions out, because those are really important for comprehension. And do link related ideas by using that, which, or who. And so here's an example. It's important that privacy is protected, that there is a public benefit, and that the findings from health data research don't disadvantage any groups. So what they've done there is repeat the word that to make it really super clear about these are the three clauses and their parallel. So to sum up, here's three strategies you might try when you're looking at your own writing. Number one, connect modifiers to the words that they modify. So don't write, please let me know whether you can meet the newest deadline as soon as possible. But instead write, please let me know as soon as possible whether you can meet the newest deadline. Strategy two, if a paragraph exceeds 6 to 8 lines of text, change the format or try to use bullets to list information. Strategy three, if you use bullet points, make sure you use parallel grammatical structure for parallel ideas, because that reinforces the fact that they're parallel and of the similar level of importance. Because lists take up more space on a page, academic research articles traditionally have avoided them. For listing research questions or items, they are still sometimes used, and I've given an example there. But you just need to know that there's reasons why traditionally they've avoided them. It's not such a problem anymore when you're looking at online publications. So to sum up, when you're doing academic writing particularly, should you aim for a plain style? And here's 5 things that I think might be true. Number one, when clarity is of paramount importance, when your real objective in the piece that you're writing is to be clear, then plain language is the way you want to go. When you're writing to non-academic audiences, particularly about technical material, you also want to aim for a plain style to make sure that they have the best shot at understanding what you're saying. Even in research articles, though, it's the method sections and the results sections to be written in a plain style. And finally, when you're describing processes or procedures, you're also going to want to use that plain style. Well, thanks for listening. Again, my name is Roger Graves. You can reach me at roger.graves@ualberta.ca or roger@wecanwrite.ca. The slides that go along with this episode will be available both at the Center for Teaching and Learning site and also at wecanwrite.ca.